the traitors, the treacherous creatures who we call our own, but they do nothing. In fact, they do more to help the other side than they ever do with us. So, yeah, I've got a place that they're going to go down first, I guarantee you. We, our enemies, we know what they're up to. I mean, let's face it, they're enemies. While these other people among us, our own, so-called, we don't consider them real enemies as they are. Anybody who's not doing a damn thing now with the internet, especially with this new revelation in communication, well, they're going to have a rough time, I'm going to tell you.
Yeah, I know. It's
anyway, that's my threat and my thought for the day, but no, I'm serious about that, very serious. But hey, brother, whatever you want to do, whenever you want to do it, it's fine with me. And yeah, if you want me back, if I don't blow this too much, we can go through lots of stuff, man, lots of stuff, including current events and shit that's happening here and in Australia and New Zealand, Tasmania, whatever you want to talk about. But anyway, it's entirely up to you.
That's right. I do that. I do that once a week, usually with Jim West. He's in New York. I go over the latest. It's a good idea, outside of books and things that you're doing like that, to plug in for. You can do half an hour or 40 minutes and just go over the latest events, and it's quick, and you get lots of info out, and it's fun too. Anyway, we're good, Tom. We'll do that, and pretty exciting about your books anyway, so we're gonna cover that today.
Go where you want to go.
I'm ready to go. You ready?
Yeah, I suppose so. Let me get a drink here real quick.
I'll bring it in. We are plugged into the Crass Files podcast. We'll say hello to members, and it's Sunday the 30th of June 2019. I'm having a great chat here with author and researcher Thomas Goodridge, and today with Tom again. It's been a long while, Tom. I think, was it last year sometime that you were in Europe and we spoke?
You've got a much better memory than me. Jeez, Adam, if you can remember that. Yeah, even a year with so many things happening seemed more like a decade ago. So if you say it was a year, it's a year.
See if I can plug it up on there, and I'll get your website up as well. We're just going to chat about your work today, Tom, your book. Here we are. I've got them all up on the website. So Summer. We talked about Summer 1945, Germany, Japan, and the Harvest of Hate. I think that was the last one. There you go. March 25th, 2018. That's when we last spoke, and then they go back to November 2015, and then May 2015, January 2015. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I remember that I've been on quite a bit, Adam, but I don't remember when. That's the problem, I guess.
That's all right. We continue, but you know, your book, Hellstorm, over the years, you know, building my website and changing and getting new listeners in and doing things. Actually, you remember we used to do quite a few podcasts with Garth, and some of those. I had about 100 podcasts on an old computer, and the thing just went down on me and couldn't retrieve them. Lost a whole lot of stuff, and then built the website and put up what I had, but couldn't put so much up as well. So I'm going to dig in there tonight. I'm pretty sure our Hellstorm is still up there, and the one we did with Kyle Hunt in regards to the movie. But today we're just going to go over your new audiobook for Hellstorm. This is pretty exciting. Before we do that, Tom, we'll just get you to go over the bullet points a little bit, just talk a bit about the original book, Hellstorm, how that's been going out there in the public, what's happening with that book, and we'll go over that a little bit before we finish up with the audio book.
Okay. I know a lot of the folks listening to this program tonight know about the book, have heard about the book, perhaps even read the book. I'll do a little postscript on this, and perhaps it'll jog their memories on the subject matter of Hellstorm, the death of Nazi Germany, 1944-1945, first published in hardback, I believe it was 2010. Then the first paperback came out in 2012. And as you mentioned, now the Hellstorm audiobook, thank goodness, is out finally. It came out about a month ago. I started to say a couple of weeks ago, but it's been about a month now, I guess. So for all those people who don't have the time to read, can't read, won't read, perhaps for physical reasons, I'm not sure. Just probably time, as a matter of fact. Now they can listen to the book. They don't have to work at it. Work, that's the word for reading, as far as I'm concerned. But this takes all the work out of it, and I'll mention more about that later. But Hellstorm is, to remind some of your folks and to inform some of your folks, it's what I consider the first comprehensive account of the worst war in human history. I'm sure some folks listening have heard that term, the Good War. Of course, that was coined by a Jew here in America. Not a good war. In fact, Hellstorm is the first comprehensive account of what the war looked like through to the losers, the vanquished of that war, not the victors who constantly, after they've won the war and occupied the nation, write the history and re-educate us on what their approach to the war was, or what they thought happened in the war, or what they want us to believe happened in the war. This is the first book to actually describe what the war looked like, the end of the war, that is, and the immediate post-war years looked like to the defeated Germans themselves. And that in itself, when I finished researching the book and writing and rewriting the book, I think the first thing that occurred to me was how all the crimes attributed to the Germans during World War II were actually projections of the American Jewish war effort, that is the Allies. These were projections of their own crimes onto the defeated Germans. That is, those people who could not say no. They had no power to say no. They had no newspapers, no authors, no books, no publishing houses. And so whatever the Allies said that they did, that's the message that stuck with the rest of the world, because that's all the world had, was to read what the victors saw in this war. But what do I mean by projection? Well, thank goodness the human mind is not capable of extreme exaggeration in their imagination. At least mine wasn't. I never, ever would have imagined the things that actually did happen to Germany could ever happen to anyone, but they did. The things that were done to the Germans during and after the war. The first thing that pops to mind is the firebombing of all German cities. Over, let's say, 20,000 population, and in some cases, even towns, smaller towns, villages, were attacked by Americans and British with firebombs. And this occurred, although the very first firebombing of a German city occurred in 1943 against Hamburg. This went on all the way to the end of the war, even after the Germans, for all intents and purposes, had lost the war. This was nothing but a deliberate, sadistic attempt to kill every man, woman, and child, pets, animals, everything in every German city. There was no longer any value to these cities. The industry, it had all gone underground to keep the war effort afloat. And so by this time, 1944 especially, and 1945, there simply was no longer any military reason to attack these towns. And so the Americans and the British, of course, at the behest of their Jewish masters, in the case of FDR, that is Franklin Delano Roosevelt, the American president, he was surrounded by Jewish advisors in there who constantly prodded him along. And of course, some of your listeners have probably heard of the Morgenthau Plan. Henry Morgenthau was the Secretary of Treasury under FDR. He was Jewish, and he proposed that Germany simply be wiped off the face of the earth. And I'm not talking in figurative terms either here. I'm talking literally, to kill every German who was alive. And they did their dead level best in the war itself. But anyway, FDR went along with it. He signed on with it, and so did his military commanders, including General Dwight David Eisenhower, the commander of the all Allied forces in Europe. They went along with this program. They were all not simply went along with it. They were proponents and enablers of this genocidal attempt to destroy Germany. And of course, whatever they said filtered down quickly to those below them, their officers and the 18-year-olds holding the rifles. And so what we have at the end of the war is not just the firebombing, deliberate, sadistic firebombing of every German city, the most famous, of course, being Dresden. But we also have on the ground a no-quarter policy. Generally, it's a no-quarter policy beginning with D-Day, as soon as the Americans and the British and the French Free Forces, that is, hit the sand on Omaha Beach and the other areas. A deliberate policy began of just killing Germans when they were captured, simply killing them. I know how preposterous that may sound, because we've seen lots of pictures of Germans in the old newsreels behind barbed wire, but most of that is after the war. I'm talking about during the war, while the war is going on, this attempt to be, well, it's just basically a black flag operation all the way through France, Belgium, the Netherlands, until they got into Germany, and of course, then of course they increased the massacre. I'm talking about German soldiers surrendering and being mowed down, being shot dead. And that goes also for the old men and little boys who form the German militia, the Volkssturm. And these people are also being killed. Hellstorm talks about this, and it does so in the words of the people themselves. It's a first person, you are their approach. In other words, I'm allowing the people, the survivors, and even those who did not survive, to tell their stories, what it was like to go through this devastating, methodical massacre of their nation. And they tell the story far better than I could, or any author, as far as I'm concerned. They tell the story in their very poignant, passionate words. And the massacres, the firebombings, yes, that takes up a chapter in the book, and the slaughter of the German soldiers and civilians on the land takes up another chapter, or chapter and a half. I'm not sure how long these are, but they come in between other things that I'd never heard of. Well, for instance, the rape. To me, this is the worst aspect of World War II, bar none, because I've always despised rape. But we had always heard about the Soviet Union, the Red Army soldiers committing rape, and there's no denying that. They did. When they came through, they, quite honestly, there were very few women who escaped, either by hiding or fleeing to safety. There was very few places they could flee to safety, as a matter of fact. But these Russian soldiers, the Soviet soldier, the average Red soldier, was encouraged, not just allowed, but encouraged to rape. Ilya Ehrenberg, a Jewish propagandist for Stalin, he encouraged them to rape all the women and children, and when you're through, kill them. In essence, that's what he said. And he's the right-hand man of Stalin, and of course, the Russian soldier, already pissed off about the Germans invading their country and fighting for so long in Russia itself. Many of them had scores to settle. And when you tell an 18-year-old that it's his duty to rape and murder, generally these young people who have not fully developed a soul or a conscience will certainly obey those orders, and they did. But one thing I found out from the research is that the average Red Army soldier, that is the average frontline fighting man, who were a majority of white Russians and Ukrainians and Belarus, people like that, these are the tough ones. They committed atrocities, it's true. There's no doubt about it. All frontline soldiers do. But those who really committed the beastly atrocities and made it a sweeping crime throughout all of Germany was the rear echelon soldiers, that is the supply side soldiers, those who are not in combat. Many of them never hear a bullet fired in anger. They're so far behind the lines. But after the Red Army soldier would move on in eastern Germany, fighting their way across toward Berlin, within a few hours, maybe a few days, but always came the rear echelon soldiers. And after the front line had moved on, the rear echelon came in. And many of these were Asiatics, especially Mongolians. The majority of them were Asiatics, as a matter of fact. And many of them were Mongolians. And these people, the crimes they commit are just almost, like I said earlier, it's you can't even imagine what I'm talking about right now. And I won't go into all of that. But the crimes they committed were just unbelievable. And it should be said that they were unbelievable even to the frontline Russian soldiers. Many, many times, white Russian officers and their men would warn the people after a town had just been captured, look, you guys have got to do something. I'm talking about the villagers or the people in the towns. You've got to move on. You've got to follow behind us because those coming behind us, that is this rear echelon group, they have no mercy whatsoever. Hell will be unleashed upon you. We promise you. So you've got to escape somehow. And that was their attempt to save these poor people who the Red Army soldier knew what was coming behind them. And they just simply, I mean, let's put it this way. The towns they came through, those people who weren't dead were had been raped to the point that they wished they were dead. And the cities were burned down. But anyway, the rape, I could go on about that. And there's, I think Adam, you've read the book and you know what some of the extremes were, and I won't get into that right now. We have enough time to get. Yes, I mean, just off the charts.
It's an incredible book, man.
Yeah,
my goodness.
But what I didn't know, though, however, when I was researching and writing Hellstorm, was the degree, the extent of rape over in the Western Front, where the Americans were coming through, the British also, but mostly the Americans. And I'll be honest with you, in summer 1945, I did get this in because you mentioned it was a new book, just came out last year. But yes, in Hellstorm itself, I don't talk much about rape on the Western Front. But since then, I'd done a lot of research for the summer 1945 book, and I found out that there is not a lot of difference between the two sides as far as rape goes. The American officers were also encouraged to allow their men to rape, and not just simply allow them to rape, but encourage them, enable them to rape. And the Americans raped on a prodigious scale that makes me ashamed to be an American, quite honestly. They did some of the same things that the Soviets had done in the East, standing in line to rape women in shops. And here's something else that both sides encouraged their men to do to the German women. Make it public, preferably in front of their family, but more than anything else, it had to be witnessed by people, whether it was out in a on a park bench in the middle of the day, or whether it was in a store shop, whether it was up against a wall. It had to be a public affair. And, of course, these are the Jewish commissars in the Eastern Front that are encouraging this with their pistols in hands, encouraging and even ordering their men to do this. But the Americans had their own Jewish commissars, D2, the intelligence, what so-called intelligence for the American Army. And they were doing virtually the same thing, encouraging. In fact, over on the American side, when the American Army invaded and occupied a village or a town, officers would go around door to door, forcing the people to write out a list of the names and ages of the people inside the homes and then tack it on their doors so that it would be much easier to come in and pick out the girls and the women and the children. And that's what I mean by rape. And rape, I've always thought of rape prior to these books as something private, something hidden, something secret, back in the dark, some dark corner somewhere. One man, one woman. Not what we're talking about in World War II. We're talking about crowds of people forced to watch. We're talking about lines of men standing there to wait their turn to rape, and some cases until a woman was dead to keep on raping. And in fact, one of the ugly aspects of this rape was when a woman was so stiff that she couldn't be raped anymore, someone was ordered to put a rock or a telephone receiver or a stick up her vagina to signify, you know, business closed. That's what I mean. And rape, I've got a new attitude toward rape now, even more hateful than I ever thought it was. I won't go any further than that. But anyway, it talks a lot about the rape, of course, because that was a very prominent aspect of the invasion of Germany by the Soviet Union and the American forces. Other things, torture. Yeah, that was a very big component of American and Soviet and French occupation. Torture for torture's sake, not torture to find any hidden gold or learn valuable business secrets or learn how, where Uncle Billy's watch is buried. Torture just for the sake of torturing somebody, just to hear him scream and yell and beg for mercy. In fact, it was terrible and very prominent over on the American Western side, of course. Everything was turned into a prison, seemingly, and the depravity involved, I won't get into that, but the worst tortures of all, at least the worst I have found, were in Poland, in camps run and operated by Jews, former concentration camp prisoners or Jews from America or wherever they escaped to in the 1930s when Hitler came to power. They were running these torture camps, and that's virtually all they were, is torture camps, where death was something to be postponed and life was meant to be continue with the sadistic torture being inflicted. And of course, you might imagine there's lots of terrible ways of torturing someone. And again, I won't get into that either, because I'm laughing, but I'm laughing because I don't know what else to do when I start talking about stuff like this. The torture, and it was pervasive, by the way, and it went on for many years. And then there are other components of this book, Hellstorm, that is, the things I'd never heard of. I had always thought that the greatest nautical disasters in world history were either the Titanic or the Lusitania, because we've heard so much about both sinkings of ships. 1,500 people died on the Titanic, 1,200 on the Lusitania, and that's a lot of people to drown in a very short time. But I found during the research of this book that these were really not that large. The number of people who drowned, who died in these other terrible ship sinkings, compared to what happened in World War II with refugee ships filled with Germans trying to escape the Soviet army, thousands of people trying to get on boats, ships, either tankers or freighters, or in some cases old steamships, passenger steamships, trying desperately to escape the Soviet army. And the most terrible of the sinkings was the Wilhelm Gustloff, which was an old steamer, a cruise ship, and it was built for roughly 2,500 passengers and crew. But the night it sailed from the Baltic area in the east, it had somewhere between 9,000 and 10,000 people on board. That's how many people crammed into that ship. And as if it wasn't terrible enough, hellish enough, this was winter, of course. It was freezing, and there was ice in the water. And then you've got three times the amount of people it should be on that ship, which means all the toilets go out quickly. And it means the smell, the nauseating smell of excrement and vomit, and the terrified screams of people who have gotten lost in this mob of people on this ship. If that all isn't bad enough, then shortly after leaving, several hours after leaving, it was hit by two Soviet submarines who knew very well that it was a refugee ship filled with civilians trying to escape. But nevertheless, the Soviet submarine shot two torpedoes into the ship, and ultimately, when it finally did roll over and sink, there were roughly 8,000 to 9,000 people who died, almost all of them. Some of them, I think, were 500 who actually did escape this. But compare that with the Lusitania or the Titanic. 8,000 to 9,000 people, and perhaps even more for all I know, compared to 1,500 or 1,200, far and away the most terrible nautical disaster in world history. And it was not the only ship to go down. There were, the Soviets were sinking everything on the Baltic. And by the way, people who think that, well, perhaps the Soviets thought they were sinking German naval ships. There were no German naval ships of any size still left floating on the Baltic. They knew very well that these ships were refugee ships, taking frightened people to a safer place over in Western Germany. So it was a massacre on the water. There's a massacre on the land, of course, and a massacre in the air, from the air, and now a massacre on the water. But it does talk about, the book does talk about this, and in again, in the words of the people themselves, the ones who experienced these things, and they tell a terrible, terrifying story. But the book also talks about the immediate post-war years, the last 2 years, or the let's call it what it really was. It was war by another name, peace. And it was not peace, of course. It was a time of re-education and denazification and starvation and rape. And it's going on and on and on. It's not letting up at all, really. In fact, for instance, Eisenhower's death camps. Some of your listeners may have never heard of this. But General Dwight David Eisenhower, the ultimate general for the Allies in World War II, and within a few years soon to be an American president, he was one of the most vengeful, hate-filled individuals I've ever read about.
Jewish as well, Tom? Jewish?
Well, some people say that. I have no proof. I have not bothered to even go any further on it. But that might explain his pathological hatred of Germans. He says it time and time again, God, I hate the Germans, he would say. He would write that to his wife. And Eisenhower, I should say, he was a desk general. He was a political appointment. He was a man who never heard a bullet fired in anger. This is the man leading the Allies, the Allied armies. And he made a comment just before the war was over. He said, God, I wish we could have killed more of them. In other words, here's the world's greatest bloodbath, and this man still hasn't gotten enough of it. So Eisenhower wanted to go on killing Germans even if the war was over, and he found a way to do it. Roughly 5 million disarmed German POW soldiers, that is, fell into his hands at the end of the war, and Eisenhower saw a way to kill even more Germans. He simply to avoid the Geneva Convention and the International Red Cross and the few people who still care about any Germans, to avoid any criticism from these areas, he simply stopped calling them POWs and started calling them DEFs, Disarmed Enemy Forces. And that, at least in Eisenhower's mind, gave him all the latitude he needed to do what he wanted with these roughly 5 million helpless, disarmed, exhausted, starving German POWs. And Eisenhower, I hate to say he went to work, because he didn't. He didn't do a damn thing. He just put them into these large open-air enclosures, many of them which were right along the edge of the River Rhine, put them in there, and that was mostly it. If they got fed something, whether it be birdseed or some other rotten type of food that could be distributed or look good to the cameras, he would do that. But for the most part, these men, over the next weeks and months, simply starved to death or died of dehydration, even though the rivers ran, you know, sometimes within a rock's throw of the camp itself, or died of lack of medicine, died of disease, or in many cases just died of simple bullets, murder. And it's been estimated, and this is the best I can do, it sounds legitimate, maybe there's more, but anywhere from 1.5 million, 800,000 to 1.5 million died under Eisenhower's, in Eisenhower's death camps. Let's call them what they were death camps, pure and simple. That's where men were designed to die in. These things that Eisenhower set up. So that's the man we made president in America a few years later. But in essence, that is what Hellstorm is about. Now, there's lots of other things. For instance, again, in the words of the folks themselves who experience things like this, you know, like anyone on a sinking ship, before you go down, you want to just have one more smile, one more piece of joy on this earth before you do go down and drown. And that was the case with the Germans toward the end of the war. They knew they were going to lose. I'm talking about soldiers and civilians. But in this case, I'm just talking about the civilians. And many of the Germans just decided to cast off any morals they had had in a previous life, a better life, or certainly during the war, and do anything they wanted. In this case, I'm talking about drinking, ribaldry, sex. Sex became just something that everybody witnessed. Sex in open places, sex in public. And so there was a lot of this going on. And, well, there were other things. Most people knew. Dr. Goebbels, the minister of propaganda for the Germans, he had throughout the war warned the people about, if we should ever be conquered, this is what you can expect. The Americans will bring in their Jews, and the Russians will bring in their Jews, and then you know what's going to happen to us. Most people heard what he was saying, read what he was saying, but I would say a great majority of people just simply thought of it as propaganda, their own brand of propaganda. And most people simply didn't buy into his warning of rape, or his warning of torture, or his warning of the slaughter of children, as a matter of fact, of the starvation they would go under. A deliberate, intentional starvation, too, by the way. But when the Germans finally surrendered, and the Americans and the British and the French and the Russians, of course, when they finally occupied all of Germany, then they realized that Goebbels had had gone down with the estimate of what would happen, because this was nothing like what Dr. Goebbels said. But that, in essence, is the book with variables in it, with certain stories that I was almost saying hopefully tell the story well, but I've had enough good reviews of the book that the people who have read it, well, people say this, and they're speaking for me when they say it, too. They say that the book has changed their whole attitude about World War II. No longer would they ever watch a movie or read a book with the same mindset. And many other people say that it's not only changed the way I look at World War II, it's changed the way I look at the world. That anything like this monstrosity could happen and be hidden. You know, it's bad enough the crimes committed, and I've more or less skimmed the surface of the crimes, but that it could also be hidden for over 70 years, kept from public view. Most people are stunned and shocked, and of course they're sickened, but then they become sad, and then they become angry and outraged that all this could happen, and they knew nothing about it. And that's very similar to the way I felt about the book when I finally finished it. I believed in this country at one time. I actually loved this country. That is America. And whenever I watched a movie as a kid, I was always on the Allied side. And it's a total kick in the teeth, all your teeth being kicked out, when you finally realize the lie, the extent of the lie, and the degree that you've been led down this rosy path of the good war and the greatest generation and nonsense like that until you believed it. And then to find out not only was it not true, but it's the truth has been hidden for so many years. And yeah, I've got to say that's the best thing that has occurred since this book has been out. So many people have finally gotten a real strong dose of reality and truth. And I've got a feeling that this will help us looking ahead in the future, because so many of us now have come to the point where we're not believing anything that a government or a media tells us. We're simply not believing it. And for the most part, I think that's a safe approach. When the government says up, you think down. When the media says right, you think left. And I think that's very healthy until we realize what the truth really is. when someone finally comes out with it. And you know, Adam, that's one of the great things about our modern existence right now, is this wonderful thing we call the internet and cyberspace, and how much easier it is than when I was growing up, and even as a young man, how much easier it is now to find out the truth in a certain matter. We're just a mouse click away from all the wisdom the world has ever seen. Of course, this most recent attempt to murder and kill all truth with their attempts at throttling social media, that's just a frightened, fearful reaction of people who are scared of what is to come, because they realize that for all intents and purposes, the story is over for them. In other words, the truth is out there, and we have it, and we are going to use it. And so that things like World War II never happen again, these monstrosities, these things that are committed against our own people. And guess what? They were committed against our own people, and they were committed by their people. We killed our own brothers and sisters in World War II. Mm. We enabled all this. We enabled what's happening today to happen. This is what this is all about. And to call that our greatest generation, well, again, only some American media type could coin that phrase, the greatest generation. It was America's worst generation by far, because they believed all the propaganda they were told, and they went off and did terrible things as a result.
Yeah,
I'll slow down now. I'll just not say nothing. I'll just, because it's a story that
there's so much, you know, so much to go through. Tom, you didn't even talk much about the firebombing, you know, and the heat of it. That's the thing with your book, and I'm going to get the audio one too as well. That's a good choice for me. But even in the book, it's like you've been transported there. You really transport the reader into that situation of what it must have been like, the absolute, as you say, the hellstorm of people hiding and these German cities and towns, and these this assault from the air. And when you're reading that book, it's my God, it's hell.
The terror bombing, the fire bombing of German cities. It's diabolical in so many ways. The format for firebombing, first a wave of, let's say, 500, 600, 700, even 1,000 American and British bombers come in and blow a town to bits, blow it to splinters. You know, much of the Germany's cities were made out of wood, and to come in and just blow it to splinters, and then those people who survived coming out an hour later out of their air raid shelters, coming out and seeing this city, their beautiful city, blown to bits, and then trying to find their relatives, trying to find lost ones. Well, guess what? 2 hours later, in comes another 500, 600, 700, 800 planes carrying incendiary bombs to light all these destroyed buildings, to light them up, to set them on fire. And thousands upon thousands of incendiary bombs falling to the earth and igniting on impact. And almost within minutes, the city goes up in flames. That's how quickly this happens when you have a napalm or phosphorus type of bomb striking wood. That's what happens. And the people who had come out of their air raid shelters, many of them try to run back into these air raid shelters, not realizing these are the worst possible places they can be during a firestorm, because their former sanctuary becomes a bake oven. And they die in these air raid shelters, and people who don't go back in, who can't get in, get stuck in the asphalt of the streets and can't move and simply ignite, just burst into flames. And those people who do get back into their air raid shelters, of course, when later, days later, when rescuers do come and try to find any survivors, what they find instead is maybe a foot of oil, of bodies that have rendered down into a liquid fat, 6 inches to a foot deep. And then the Americans had something called the Targets of Opportunity, and this was another demonic aspect of World War II. Targets of Opportunity, that's a very nice sounding phrase. What it actually translates into, though, is the Americans were ordered to go out and shoot anything in Germany that moved. This is the last year of the war. And American pilots in their fancy fighter jets, or jets, they might as well have been, because they, I think they got to 400 miles an hour. They were really fast. But yeah, these were young guys whose souls had not fully developed, quite honestly. Similar to people who play video games today. It's fun killing X-Men on videos because, you know, you can act like a hero when you slaughter things on that. Well, this was very similar to that. Let's call it an early day video game. To shoot anything in Germany that moves, night or day, and anything that moved in Germany, don't forget, Germany's on the verge of starvation even this late in the war. Americans are shooting trains filled with refugees. They're shooting boats that are trying to get some food into the starving people. They'll shoot cars on highways. They will shoot women on bikes trying to buy bread at a nearby village, if it has any bread. Children in playgrounds. Hospitals with red crosses on top. Animals in the field, for God's sakes. And farmers trying to plow to grow a little food. This is what targets of opportunity is. Thousands upon thousands, no doubt, died during that little monstrous spectacle of American airmen doing this. That's what I mean. I've lost all faith, all confidence in this country, because anybody who could do that, I don't share a similar DNA with. I'm sorry, I don't.
No.
I don't think enough. You could not. Put enough propaganda in my head. I'm going to say this too. I was in the military at one time. I was 18 years old, just like a lot of these guys. And yes, there were guys around me who would go out and practice with throwing their knives at gophers who might stick their head up out of a hole. I never could get into that. Now, call me a sissy, call me a wiener, call me a wimp, call me whatever you want. I simply did not get my kicks out of slaughtering something just because I could. And so that's one reason I simply do not believe I share much DNA with the average American. And thank God there were many others like myself, even in World War II, because I also include them in the book, those who did not succumb to the temptation to do such sadistic acts as I describe in this book, as the people describe, not me, as they describe. Incidentally, the book is dedicated to the voiceless victims of the world's worst war. And that's what I wanted this to be, as a monument, a testimony to what these people went through. Those who died in the war, those who were victims of the war, those women who were raped and raped again 20, 30, 40, 50 times a night, hundreds of times a week, and yet they still managed to somehow survive that war. Now, they survived physically, but mentally, no, they were victims just as sure as their sisters who died physically. It was the spiritual massacre of German womanhood. And I know enough about rape now that a woman might survive what I just described physically, but they are murdered spiritually. And they never recover from this.
Yeah,
I know this for a fact. I've actually wrote a book once on one woman who was raped and murdered, and I know a little bit about it on a personal level and from writing this book on a national level. And so we had a generation of women who were, for the most part, destroyed, either physically or emotionally. Well, every time I talk about this book, it's like I'm back there again, Adam, researching this every day, every night, coming up with these accounts from people who did manage to physically survive the war. In some cases, they didn't, of course, but it's almost as if I'm back in World War II again. When you write a book and you rewrite it and try to improve upon its readability, it has a tendency to seep into your bloodstream, you might say. You actually experience a lot, not a little, but a lot of what these people experience. So if you can imagine a writer sinking in a ship like the Wilhelm Gustloff on an icy black Baltic Sea after we've been torpedoed, and the screams and the shouts and the pianos shifting to one side of the huge room and crushing people with a loud roar as these people tried to escape this, or when it's a woman being raped by a laughing crowd of Americans or Soviets, and there's a large audience standing around horrified by it, of course. I'm that woman. I'm going through that every time I write and rewrite this story. And when I come on a program like yours, suddenly I'm thinking very deeply about these people, what I wrote. That's just by nature. And I've written roughly 15 books in my life, and it's to a degree has been very similar in every book I wrote. But of course, nothing like Hellstorm and the most recent book, Summer 1945. But that's the bad side of writing a book like this or these two books. It's there's going to be pieces of you left all along the way during the writing and research of these books. And yep, I'll never be the same person again. I don't know what I was actually before I wrote these books, but anyway, that's why I'm an old guy getting older every day, but I'm still fighting. Never will I give up. No. For the sake of these people, for the sake of the future generations as well, our kids, their grandkids. And, that's why we all must fight, so that something like this just does not happen again. So that when someone comes out and they point to another nation that needs to be destroyed and call them beasts and subhumans and animals and terrible, terrible people, and we need to destroy them with our missiles and aircraft and occupy them and turn them into slaves, I'm going to ask you, is that the best you can do? That's what I mean by fighting, never allowing this to happen again. And I think the more people who understand this story of Hellstorm in Summer 1945, out of any 1,000 people who read and understand this, there'll probably be a goodly percentage of people who say, hey, I'm going to work against this night and day for the rest of my life. And so that's one positive that I always take from programs like yours, that some people will hear about this, and you never know, there might be that one person or two people who actually do make a gigantic difference in this terrible period we seem to be going through right now. Throughout the white world, Australia, New Zealand, Tasmania, Europe, Ireland, England, France, Germany, America, Canada, you know, we can rattle these off, but we're all going through the very same thing Australia is going through right now.
It's the same thing sort of happening now, Tom. It's just got a different face on it, you know. It's more modernized, you know. I mean, you look at what they've done, what they're doing to Europe, just flooding Europe again with these hordes from Africa and all these countries, all these people that don't belong there, the rape going on in Germany, even today still. And, you know, you look at the rape that's being done to the most massive scale on camera. Being beamed through some of the biggest websites on planet Earth, the most watched websites, and this is predominantly mostly Jewish-controlled pornography out of the United States, where it's just become so brutal now. You've got these thugs raping girls that barely look 17 years old on there, doing horrible sexual things to them on camera, and it's called entertainment now. You know, and it's unbelievable. And in this country, in Australia, anybody who talks about this, not this, but to anyone who, say, for example, would criticize, you know, what Israel's doing in the Gaza, or Israeli policy, or Israeli control in the US, or whatever it is, you get labeled, of course, the anti-Semite, and we get the whole drama about the Holocaust, and, you know, Hitler killing all the Jews, and all the propaganda that we grew up to listening as kids as well. The Australian media just never stopped with it. It just goes on and on and on and on about the Holocaust and on all of this. And of course, people go to the movies with their popcorn and they sit down and they watch movies about Winston Churchill and how much of a wonderful man he was when he was a traitorous, murdering pedophile, a perverted pedophile and a psychopath. You know, and we go down and we watch this greatest Englishman who ever lived and how he saved Europe and all of this. And it's just, it's unbelievable, the propaganda coming out of the Australian media and how fast they jump on anyone who dares to open their mouth. keep going on and on and on and on and on. It never ends with the whole Holocaust thing. And of course, as you said, what happened, the real war, the worst probably war, as you say, in human history is completely hid under the carpet. No one seems to know about it, and no one wants to talk about it. And all we hear is the Holocaust.
That World War II was genocide by war, of course, an attempt to kill as many Germans as they possibly could and as many Europeans. What we're going through right now, though, as we both know, is genocide by repopulation or invasion of the colored races of Earth.
It's just a different face on it. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. It's just a different way of doing it. But it's still, it's the end result's the same. We're not here anymore. And, back in the bad old days, I came from that bad old days when we had to communicate with stamps and envelopes and things like that and flyers and maybe an occasional magazine. Back in the bad old days, our fathers and our grandfathers that may have had a patriotic gene in them, the first time they said something that was against the system, they were labeled a racist, a neo-Nazi, anti-Semitic. And it was good enough that it would stop them in their tracks. That's the bad old days. They can call me anything they want. I really don't give a damn what they think about me. I know where I'm at, and they can call me all the names they want. It will not slow me down one second. And I'd encourage anybody listening tonight, never be afraid of these words. They've always called us these words, and they generally worked. Well, they don't work anymore. They only work with those people that are, well, I won't go into that, but once you get to a certain level that Adam and I are on, words just don't matter anymore. We know where we're coming from. We know who's doing the name calling. That's enough said right there on that. But yeah, we're still in the same problems, but I've got a lot of hope for the future, and maybe some other day I can come on and we can talk about that. But
absolutely, yeah, yeah. I mean, it does get a bit... it gets you down, Tom, but it's, you know, Hellstorm is that that ugly, terrible, horrific mirror that humanity needs to stare into and face. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, it's not going to just go away because you ignore it. And that's what many people do now. They're so busy in their lives, they just ignore that, and they don't want to read that because they feel like it inflicts their lives with this negativity and stuff. But I think that every human being needs to read a book like that and understand what happened, the real history of the world, and that we're all being hoodwinked, and our children are being hoodwinked, we're being lied to, we're being brainwashed in schools and modern universities, and we're not being told the truth. And as you said, hopefully... you know, it's going to hit that point where people are going to be thirsty for information, and you know, reading a book like Hellstorm, yes, it'll probably have people in tears. I'd say it will. And that was a kind of book that I had to keep putting down and come back to, because it was, some of it was very, very hard to read. And the thing for me, you know, being a Sagittarius, you know, I can take this stuff and, you know, as I'm reading it, but I just, deep down, you sort of think to yourself, my God, like, how can human beings be capable of doing something like that to other human beings, you know? You just can't, I can't get to the point, I can't get there, Tom, just to think how they did that, how that happened, how could you do that to women and children? It's just, whole parts of that book where I had to put it down and kind of, you know, come back to it and sort of get my head around it. But it's one of those things we have to face. It's part of our history. It's what happened on planet Earth. It happened. It's not going to go away. It's there. So people really need to understand it, I think.
Yeah, I agree.
It doesn't go away just because you ignore it.
No, it hasn't gone away, because we have proof of that in the Middle East right now.
It's still there, isn't it, Tom? This evil, same evil you speak about in Hellstorm, is right there, right now.
Just like the Jewish power grid in the world pointed at Germany and Austria and Italy, and the Americans dutifully obeyed and came in and slaughtered and defeated those nations. So today, Israel is pointing at any nation that it doesn't like in the Middle East, and America seems like an obedient pit bull.
Trump's obviously a stooge there, Tom. Yeah, Trump.
Yeah. Yes. Yes.
Any hope or no hope at all?
No hope.
No hope with him, huh?
No. No, I worked for him. I voted for him, of course. But no, I'm extremely disappointed in that. And I mean, it's another thought altogether. But yes, we have to remember what happened to us in the past so that we never allow this to happen, not only to ourselves, but to anyone else in this world. We must stop it dead in its tracks. And we can do that. We can do that now. We've got the power to do that with the acts that are being committed by the Jewish power grid in the world right now to deny us access to communication through social media. That's not an act of strength. If it was, they wouldn't do anything because they wouldn't need to. This is an act of fear and essential or potential defeat soon to happen. This attempt to stop us from communicating because but it's not going to work because we're talking about the best and the brightest people on Earth right now. Even though our numbers are dwindling, we have some of the brightest and most intelligent people on our side right now, and there is no way they're going away. They're there, and they're going to keep creating as we go along and finding new loopholes in these things. I won't go any further than that. I can tell you right now, I've been in communication with some of the most incredibly intelligent, talented people that are working on things right now.
Oh, it is. It is, Tom, and I think they're shooting themselves in the foot. Massive amounts of people are leaving YouTube. All these social media giants like Facebook that have had so much control for so long. Just last night, I was being sent some stuff on these incredible real alternative social media outlets and new ones being built by these guys you talk about, these people with such a great mind for technology and how to do this so quickly. And you can sign up to these places and be a member. I'm working on all that at the moment. So eventually I will completely move off these Facebook and everything. And I'm really going to do everything from my website, but I'll be using these new alternative freedom of speech outlets that are just doing, they're growing as more people come on board, you know, and they just look fantastic. And I think it's all going to change, and the pool's going to drain for these big social media giants that are screwing everybody over and trying to take away our freedom of speech. Which they're doing, but I think it is looking positive in that regard, Tom, and especially with, I mean, look at what you're able to do now with Hellstorm. I mean, we're on our hour now. We'll finish up and just talk about this and just the narrator as well. Maybe we can get Paul on sometime, but look at the technology where you're able to put Hellstorm out on this audiobook for folks to sit down and listen to. This is where we're going as well. Finish up here, Tom, and just plug that a little bit, the book, what this means to you, and a little bit how it came about. Just mention Paul a little bit, and I'll put all the information up with the podcast anyway.
Okay. The book Hellstorm, The Death of Nazi Germany, 1944-1947. It's been out a number of years now and still for sale. It's
2012, available. Huh?
That's when the paper came out.
Yeah.
And I think it's $25. Amazon.com, though, is still, I think, the best place to get it. Or Amazon Australia, I think, for most of your listeners, preferably. Or BarnesandNoble.com, BooksAMillion.com. It's the same price, I think. I had been signing certain books and sending them to Australia, but I've got to quit doing that now. They've got some setup between Australia and the U.S. where third parties, that's what I am. A third party cannot do that. They just rack up the price too much. So you can go on, like I mentioned, the Amazon.com or Amazon Australia and find the book for sale there. Or the audiobook, if you don't have time to read, and I'm one of those who does not have time to read anymore, quite honestly. Or if you lack the physical ability to read, you might have bad eyesight or hell, I don't know what's going on in your home, but you can listen to the book now. Everybody can listen to a book. You may not be able to read a book, but you can certainly listen to a book. And let me say this: this is a book, an audio book you will not forget. And it's not simply because of the book itself or the subject matter. It's because of the man who does the reading of the book. His name is Paul English. His voice is both powerful, passionate, and very, very professional. I mean, this is one of the best read books I've ever heard in my life, not simply because it's my book, because of who's doing the reading. It's an incredibly good book, and that book can be ordered through hellstormaudiobook.com.
That's not on Amazon or anything, Tom.
No,
it's got to go through your website, right?
Yes, it goes through our company website, you might say, mm-hmm. hellstormaudiobook.com, and you'll have that within an hour or less. Also, Summer 1945, that came out last year. Maybe next time I come on, we can talk a little bit about that, because some of the things I've been saying tonight, don't forget, it's evening here in America, in Florida, you're going to be very shocked, as I was, about Japan.
Oh, yeah.
Summer 1945, Germany, Japan, and the Harvest of Hate. And we'll talk more about Germany then, and Japan especially. And by the way, while I'm on the subject of Summer 1945, anybody out there listening, if you know of someone who is a native Japanese speaker but has a great command of English and who might be interested, a Japanese nationalist would be perfect. But I've been wanting for over a year now to find a Japanese translator for this book, Summer 1945, because Japan is going through a lot of the same problems that the Germans are going through today. I won't go any further than that, but this could be a very good book for the typical Japanese person who believes the American narrative after World War II. Don't forget, they were re-educated also, that is the Japanese. And if anybody listening knows of someone, a native Japanese speaker with a good command of English, please drop me a line at mtgoodrich@aol.com. And I'd like to talk with that person. But Summer 1945, yes, it's been out about a year. And it's very quickly now, soon, there's going to be a German translation of that book. And also there's going to be Italian translation of Hellstorm.
Wow.
Hellstorm is in a number of languages, French, German, and so on. But now it'll be Italian, too, and that's very important, I think. Italy's on the front line of Europe right now, as we all know. And there's a lot of good people in Italy that need this book, quite honestly. But that's pretty much it. I've got other books that are being translated. Well, Hellstorm being translated into Lithuanian, by the way, and Croatian. So things seem to always be happening with this. But yes, a Japanese translation of both Hellstorm and Summer 1945. Ooh, I'd like to work on that because Japan needs the help, quite honestly. And pretty much that's it, Adam.
Yeah, Summer 1945, Germany, Japan, and the Harvest of Hay. We did a podcast show and promoted that book, so that's on my mm-hmm. website as well. You go a little bit deeper into that book and that whole situation. That's on my website.
That's what I mean by getting old. Yeah, it's been only a year, as you talked about. We've already talked about it, so we'll scratch that one. I do have a website, thomasgoodrich.com, anybody curious about that, with some posts on there and some audios. And also they can order books on there also. But that's pretty much it.
No, it all looks amazing on there. How's all the books and that going? How's it all this machine going that you're doing? Is it going well?
I wish I was getting rich on this because I think you know mostly what I do with the money. But yep. I'm not getting rich. Books do sell, but it's don't forget mainstream publishers, they wanted no part of this book, and nor did the reviewers. So it's slow to sketchy type of thing, but it's the people I'm reaching that I get most excited about. You've got to want the book, first of all, to order it. And I'd rather reach one person than 1,000 who really are just picking the book up for, amusement, I suppose, if anybody could be that sadistic to find amusement in these books. But so I'm comfortable. I'm happy. happy with the results. I wish they were better, but I'll take what I get. I've met so many good people that are like yourself and like the people we've talked about who've read this book. I've had, let me say this one final thing about Hellstorm. I've met an incredible array of individuals since this book came out. And yes, many of them are just working stiffs like ourselves, or they're just Joes and Jims and Jones, normal people. But I've been fortunate to get word from people that are movers and shakers. One was an incredibly high individual in the European Union who believed everything I wrote because, as he said, this is annotated. You've got your sources in there. You're not writing something from your imagination. This is true. Oh, I know it's true.
Yeah.
And we have, I think it's comforting to hear that even in the EU, we've got some people, at least one, who is actually working for our side. And I've met some of the most incredibly talented people that are at the top of their professions. You know, doctors, lawyers, airplane pilots, people that... So it's not so much the quantity as the quality of people who are reading this book that I'm most encouraged by. And I think I can say the same thing about summer 1945. But anyway, Adam, that's pretty much it. Just have to get a hold of me next time, anytime you get some free space in there, and we can talk about anything you want to talk about.
We do, yeah. I'd love to talk to you about Europe a little bit and, you know, that kind of stuff. Look at Hungary a little bit, what's happening there and other issues. And, of course, we did. Yeah, summer 1945 was amazing. We did go over how incredible the Japanese people are. What a beautiful race of people there. And I really hold hope for them. I hope they can pull their stuff together because they're great people. And that was an amazing book as well. So I'm glad we covered that.
You know, Japanese are known as the Prussians of the Orient before World War II.
They're just amazing.
They're so much like Europeans.
They are.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, it's a white European country of that part of the world, in Asia, isn't it?
It is. Very much so.
They're so much like we are. They're amazing. How they run everything, it's so well done. They're really on top of things. Amazing people.
Yep.
That's why they hit them.
Yeah, yeah.
They snuff it out. Yeah, anything good in this world, you know.
But anyway, anybody, again, Paul English is as good a narrator as anyone will ever hear in their entire lives. It's really exciting to have somebody like this narrating a book of yours. This was a first, too, by the way.
Absolutely. So.
It's really exciting, and
such
I'm still
a good
excited
idea.
About it.
Oh, man, you know? People love listening to podcasts and all that. I'm one of those people. I've got my Kindle. I read books as well, of course, but I love listening as well. It helps me. I'm not in front of the screen too much. I can sit down and listen through. It's something I really enjoy, so it's such a good idea and such an important book to start off that transition, Tom, because I think you're going to keep going here and do more.
Well, anyone who's interested in that audiobook, just have to, like I said, hellstormaudiobook.com. They could go in there and order it, or they can check out three different excerpts of Paul's reading of the book. Several different types of parts of the book, and just hear what I'm talking about. That's the reason I'm so excited about this book. But yeah, they can do that, and hopefully they'll order a book. But the book itself is, the audiobook is 14 hours long, and then some. Yeah, so it's worth the $20, quite honestly. Yeah, but it's great. But yeah, man, hey, it's always fun being with you on here. And back in the old days, Garth used to be a part of it, and that was really fun. Not that you're not; it's just that sometimes three make a perfect crowd. I just hope everybody who was listening enjoyed what we. No. I hope everybody learned something from what we've talked about today. Not enjoy, because quite simply, there's no way to enjoy something like this. You might enjoy the ability to learn, but not enjoy it for its own sake. No, it's impossible.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. It's just understanding's the key, and yeah, we need to face up to what happens. What's happened in history? What's happening now? We need to face it, and we need to find a way around it or through it. Tom, I would say a way to, you know, if we can't understand it, we can't break it down, and we can't get rid of it. This thing needs to be expelled from this planet. Needs to be expelled from, I don't know where we could put this. This thing, John, Tom, whatever it is, whatever this thing is that's been ghosting us throughout our history, it's still there today, and it is evil and it is dark, and it needs to be just expelled like a parasite from existence, you know, and we need to face up to it and work together. Otherwise, we're not going to be able to do it. We can't just ignore it. It's very important. Yeah. So your books and all that you're doing, you're one of the most bravest people in history to write this book, and what you've done for humanity and the German culture and people themselves as well. To there's not many anyone really, Tom, that's gonna do a book. You're the first one, really. I mean, no one's gonna do it, really. There's a lot of people doing websites and talking, but they haven't done a book like this. So thank God you did it, and it's out. And we just keep moving forward.
Well, thank you so much. That's wonderful to hear. It's very precious to me also, Adam. Thank you so much for what you just said. It's
true, mate. It's true. Absolutely true. 100%. Yeah, that you did this book. Man, wow, it's a massive, massive step. It's something that, you know, in 100 lifetimes, you could look back and say, I did that. I did it, you know. To this planet to learn and achieve and be a better person before you pass over to the next life or into the afterlife experience. And I think what you've done for humanity is incredible, man. And it should be very extraordinarily proud of doing this book. And it's not a great experience for people to read. I understand that, but it had to be done, and you did it.
Thank you again. And let me encourage everyone listening to expel their own inertia, to become active. Now's the time. Now's the time we need that help. And it's not enough to just simply listen to a program like this and think you're doing something. That's not what I'm talking about. It's time to do something. If you've got talent, please give it. We could always use talent, whether it's writing, painting, describing things, or technical know-how on computers. If you've got that, please volunteer, give it. If you've got something else you think it's of value, please consider giving that too. If you have nothing, if you have no talent, if you have no education, if you have virtually nothing, well, give something you might have, whether it's, let's just say this, everybody's got some money. Broadcasts like this are not free. It may sound like it at times, but if you've got something extra in your purse or your pocketbook or your billfold today, please consider it, giving it to Adam at the Kras Files, because he can use it to continue programs just exactly like this. That's being proactive, folks. That's getting rid of some of that inertia. And I know a little bit about inertia myself, but it's creating an activist out of yourself and somebody who's actually making a difference, who's actually fighting the good fight along with us, who will be a comrade to us. So please consider that, and hopefully I didn't misspeak, Adam. I know you could probably use the money to pay for more.
It's hard. It is hard. It gets to you and with family and everything I'm trying to do. That's why I created a members area on the website. And it's just $5 a month for folks. And really, yes, you can become a member and get access to great podcasts and articles and things like that. And as we build, we can put more in, but it also helps to keep my website running and getting this information out to people as well, to continue, because it isn't easy, Tom, as you know. Yeah, it's a hard slog for us, but I had to find a way to get something back and to help me move along here. So it's a lot of time just to do this podcast today with you, what we've done, and then later I'll have to do it later on, you know, to upload all that and put in all the material and the links and everything and make it look nice and then split it up in there and then do all that. It all takes time, and you're in front of the computer, my eyes suffer, you know. It eats into your family life on the weekend, you know. So it isn't easy, you know, over the years. And we need people's help as well. And also, Tom, you know, people can buy books, of course, and there's nothing better than that because you can pass them on. You know, you might have a grandparent or a friend or someone at work, you can borrow them the book and they'll read Hellstorm, and then, you know, someone else can, and you can give them the links and everything like that. So information can spread like a fire, you know, as well, you know, yeah, around, and people can read that and share it as well. And, but this is a good way. It really is, because you can do these shows and you can put it out there, and all the links are up there for people to buy things and click on things, and they can listen, and you can get information out, not like the old days writing a letter, as you said. You know, you gotta put a letter out to someone, or you can put information out now and it just goes online and God knows where it goes, you know. And these kinds of websites like yours and mine are very popular in Germany, my website's very popular in the Czech Republic and these countries as well, so I know they appreciate it, and they appreciate there's not many people doing these kinds of shows. And as you said, it's hard to get the information out, but it's with the internet today and how we can use it for a positive, for positivity, you know, on our circles. And it's great. It's a great way to get this information out, our voices, your information, the links to the books, the new audiobook out on the internet. Boom, it goes. People have got access straight away, so it's fantastic. Technology is speeding up, man.
Extreme pleasure to be with you again. And good folks, if you got $5 in your pocket, give it to Adam.
That's
first.
All right.
That can mean later, but start with Adam. That's where, because without Adam, there is no platform. Without no platform, I'm not here. So just look at it that way. Go in that direction. I think we'll all be. We'll all understand where we're going then. Hey, brother, I'll talk to you later. Whenever you want me back on, just let me know.